I asked two people to read into the first half, but you'll have to forgive me for deciding at the end that, for reasons that I'll explain in a second, I definitely want to focus on the second part of Parshat Vayera. What that means is taking a few minutes now and reading the second part of Parshat Vayera. That is from, let me tell you exactly, Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph. It's basically the reading of Rosh Hashanah. You'll be doing now the first and second day together. A little before Chamishi. Chapter 21, Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk 1, and Vayera. Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph. Four Pasukim before Chamishi to the end of the Parsha. Okay. That's not that much. Take like 5 more minutes or so. And please read through it. And you'll see soon why I chose to skip. We will, of course, next week on Sunday already, go back to the beginning of the Parsha. But being, listen carefully, as you're reading, keep this question in mind. Being that I will claim that the second half of the Parsha directly connects and continues the Inyanim that we spoke about in Parshat Lech Lecha, specifically in the second part of Parshat Lech Lecha, the issues that we spoke about in the last 2 days, that's why I directly want to skip ahead, and then we'll go back to the beginning of Parshat Vayera, even though usually I go by order, there's, depending on topics, I sometimes skip as we will be doing now. So please read from Perek Kaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph to the end of Parshat Vayera. Continue the Inyanim of Parshat Lech Lecha in its second part. And the reason why I'm ma'arich, I'm going in length, going into these inyanim in the past 2 days and today as well, besides the fact of our chiyuv to learn Torah, but there is a extra, another additional chiyuv mitzvah that we are fulfilling by doing so. And to see that for a moment, to see the significance of why it's so important to speak about what we've been talking about the past 2 days and today, open up at the very end of Torah, please. We recently read it in the Shabbat before Yom Kippur this year, and that is Shabbat Parshat Hazino. Please open up at the very end of the Devarim, just for a quick moment. We're talking about Sefer Devarim, Perek Lamed Bet. Sefer Devarim Perek Lamed Bet, Parshat Ha'azinu. We're all familiar with it, at least from far. The text, the way it's written, it's a shira. It's the song of the history of Klal Yisrael being told in advance, before Klal Yisrael, just before Moshe leaves, on the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe and Yehoshua, so it's told in the introduction to Parshat Ha'azinu, Parshat Vayelech, the Parshat before. Moshe is called to the tent of meeting on his last day with Yehoshua, and they're both told together, Moshe, you should know, this is your last day, and once you die, and your children, and your Bnei Yisrael are going to go into Eretz Yisrael, they're going to go off the derech, not they may go off the derech, they will go off the derech. This is the only place that the Torah does not speak about what may happen if you do not listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which often we do find in Chumash, V'hayayim Shamoa, V'im Lo Tishmo, or Parshat Luchukotai, the Tochachah and Vayikra are Parshat Kitavah, the Tochachah and Devarim. All those are, I won't say numerous, but a bunch of times the Torah says, if you follow the way of Hashem, so-and-so will come to you, and you do not, chas v'chila punishment, but never do we go and determine in advance with complete determinism that this is going to be the pattern of your history. The only place Torah does so, so much so that the Rambam brings it as a supposable contradiction to the pillar of Kol HaTorah Kula, and that is of the Bechira Chofshit, the free will, is this Parsha. He quotes from this Parsha, actually, and he says, it can't be. How can Bnei Yisrael be told, how can Moshe be told that Klal Yisrael is going to go off the track and then Bnei Yisrael be punished for it? So, without going into what the Rambam discusses there, it's not our topic right now. It is, though, Kedai to look inside and to discuss it, and maybe at some point we will look into it. But in any case, Parshat Ha'azino is a song of the history of Klal Yisrael. Ever since they were in the desert, coming into Eretz Yisrael, going off the derech of Hashem, worshipping idols, shamanta, avita, kasita, mistreating the abundance of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore being sent out to Galut, going through the horrible stage of long, long, painful, tragic persecutions of Galut. And at the end of days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take us back and gather us back into Eretz Yisrael, And the Shira is defined in its introduction, hence Parsha Vayelech, as you need to know before your history begins, meaning before you come into Eretz Yisrael, how your history is going to look like from beginning all the way to the end, and in terms of the bigger picture, so that anything you ever go through at any stage of history, put it in the, you have a chiyuv to put it into the context of this song, so you understand the circumstances of your life, whatever generation that you may be at, and in the context of the Song of Azim. And if you do not attempt to understand the patterns of history in your generation in the context of the Song of Azim, you're not living your generation correctly, you're not living it in the scope of history as a whole, from beginning to the end of days. To that extent, and in fact, Parsha HaZinu, I always define it as, it's the last teaching of Moshe Rabbeinu. You'll ask me, what about Parsha Zota Bracha? Zota Bracha is not a teaching. Zota Bracha is after I've taught you everything in the Torah, I'm giving you a bracha that you'll be able to, each Shevet in his own way, be able to fulfill that which you learned in Torah. But Torah in terms of teaching, Torah ketorah, kehora'ah, is teaching you a guide to life, a guide to history for Klal Yisrael, the last, and summing up and wrapping up Parsha, and therefore I suspect to say that on many levels the most important Parsha in the Torah is Parsha HaZinu, that often receives least attention almost in all Parshiyot in the Torah, because, anybody know why? When does it usually fall? Often on Shabbat Shuvah, and then people's mind is in Aser Yemei Shuvah, Drasha Shabbat Shuvah, so Parsha HaZinu is somehow pushed to the side, it doesn't get the attention, the incredible attention that it really should receive. And in the context of that, I just look inside in one pasuk, which really is the focal point of this parasha, pasuk zayin, perek lamed bet pasuk zayin. Please remember this pasuk, I'll often quote it, perek lamed bet pasuk zayin, zechor yemot olam, this is a chiyuv in the Torah. Zechor yemot olam, binu shnot dor vador. A Jew has a chiyuv to remember the days of the world, to remember the patterns that unfolded throughout history. And to understand, and to contemplate and understand, vidu shnot dor vador, to understand the development and unfolding of generations. This is a chiyuv, like any other chiyuv in the Torah. You have a chiyuv to put on tefillins, because it says so in the Torah, you have a chiyuv to examine history. It has nothing to do whether you are into or not into history as a major. This is a chiyuv as a Jew, as a chat in his life, in the broader context. A Jew has a chiyuv to perceive his life in the context of the Song of Azim. I'm bringing this up in terms of this additional level, as I said, additional chiyuv of learning the inyanim that have to do with specifically with Yishmael, besides the general chiyuv of Limud Torah, because of how relevant it is to our condition as mankind, but more important as Jews worldwide and specifically in Eretz Israel today. And that directly takes us into my first question for today. In what way did the piece that you read, the second half of Parshat Vayelech, Parshat Vayera, continue directly the inyanim of the second half of Parshat Lech Lecha, which is why I chose to skip? Yes, there.
Well, the first part of the second part has to do with sending it.
Sending Shmuel away, so therefore define the common denominator of the second half of Parsha Lech Lecha and the second half of Parsha Vayera. Okay, or the selection between the Beru. I like using that term, the Beru, the selection between Yishmael and Yitzchak in the household of Abraham, which has two chapters to it. There is the Lech Lecha chapter to it, and then there is the Vayera chapter to it. The only difference is that in the Lech Lecha expression of the Beru, is both times is with Sar. It's both times Avram does not want, and it's Sar that's insisting that the Yishmael element be removed. Either in Parshat Lech Lecha, by insisting, I don't want Hagar in my household, send her away. But she comes back because the Malach says so, to give birth to Yishmael. Parshat Vayera, Yishmael's already, of course, born. Yitzchak then is born. And then slowly, as they're growing up together, Sarah's picking up that this is going to be incredible bad hashpa influence on Yitzchak. Lo yirash ben ha'amah zeh im bnei Yitzchak. I don't want them growing up together. Send them away. And Avram Bino has a hard time with it. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram Bino, listen, kol hashot malacha Sarah, shema bekola, listen to Sarah, send him away. And this is two pieces, two chapters of one topic, and that is the beru between Yishmael and Yitzchak. So in terms of our timeline that we've been developing ever since the beginning of Sefer Bereshit. It's an underlying selection process, underlying the Sefer. We've come to the stage of extending from Avraham Avinu onwards. And we're at this point, who is continuing Avraham Avinu? We're already told, we know it already in the context of the Brit Milah, Yitzchak will continue. With him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Mekimas Brit, and Yishmael is pushed away to the side. This is turning into a daily. I have no choice but to bring it right now. I hope it's okay. Okay. So, anyways. Yishmael is born. Yishmael is sent out of the household of Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu, sorry, insists on that. And again, Hagar finds herself being spoken to from a malach. And basically, she's told that the child will multiply and turn into great people. And in the end, by the end of the parsha, she ends up making sure that Yishmael finds a wife. And that's a wife from Mitzrayim. Freud would have had a great time with this. That somehow the fact that his mother is Mitzri, and Yishmael, we spoke about the relationship between the Mitzri aspects within Yishmael drawing from his mother, and it's expressing itself again, and the fact that he chooses to bond and marry a woman from Mitzrayim, we'll be talking about it soon more. So, anyways, that's this piece. Then skip, please, to Shvi'i, and that is Perek Kaf Bet Pasuk Aleph. And the topic of the discussion from here to the end of the parsha is the famous topic of the Akedah, what we read in the second day of Rosh Hashanah. My question then is, in what way is this parsha of the Akedah continuing the same topic of the Beru, the selection, the clarification between Yishmael and Yitzchak? True, it does not appear in the actual text of the Pesukim, but Chazal explained the Pesukim as such. Anybody know what I'm referring to? In what way are we continuing the issue of Yishmael versus Yitzchak, at least in terms of the way Chazal view the story of the Akedah, specifically in the beginning of it? Before we even go on, just one second, sorry, Sadia, I'll mention a Gemara that talks about a discussion between Yishmael and Yitzchak. Where Yishmael says to Yitzchak, oh, you think you were Moshe Nefesh in Al-Qaeda? I was Moshe Nefesh, but I did Bris Milah at the age of 13. You did it as a baby, you didn't have any choice in the matter. It's much more Mesirut Nefesh to do this already as a young adult. And of course, the answer ultimately is the Al-Qaeda. That's on one level the relationship. But Saadi, what did you want to say?
It
says, take Bimchad Yechidecha, yes. What? Okay. Nachon, more. Yes, Ari. Very good. Let's see what Ari is referring to. Look inside, please. This is quite incredible. We'll further Shuri, maybe next week and the week after, we'll see more expressions and connections with this. But in the meantime, it says like this. I'm reading the parsha of Akedah. Vayecha advarim ha'ele en perek efbet usugale. Ve'elokim nisa et Avraham ve'yomer elav Avraham ve'yomer ineni ve'yomer kach na et bilcha et yichidcha. That's what Sadi was referring to. Asher ahavta et Yitzchak. Chazal described, as Sadi really was implying, a dialogue between Avraham Avinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which son? I have more than one son. Anyways, HaKadosh Baruch Hu clarifies Yitzchak. The Lech Lecha, again, the reappearing of this very significant term, Lech Lecha, which we did not really speak about so much, but I do recommend and I give it definitely as food for thought for people who did not pick up on it. Lech Lecha appears now a second time, at the very beginning, the beginning of the process of Avraham Avinu, and that is going, leaving Karan to go to Eretz Kanan, and in the completion of the process of Avraham Avinu, this is the Akedah, is the completion of the 10 Nisyonot of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is on the verge of reaching the peak of his Madrega, and again, wrapping up his Madrega, we find this term Lech Lecha again. In any case, Lech Lecha l'Eretz Moriah ve'aleu sham le'ola, al achad ha'harim asher omar alecha, again, by the way, similarity, just like we saw in Lech Lecha, to the land that I will show you. Yet we don't determine in advance what that land will be, only once you get there. Here also we find, when you go to the mountain I will show you. Start walking, and at some point you'll know which mountain. So, he goes and does it. Look inside, please. ויחבוש את חמרו, takes his donkey, ויקח את שני נערים איתו, he takes his two נערים with him, ויצחק בנו, ויבקע ציולה, ויעקב וילך אל המקום אשר אמר לו אלוקים. טוב, ביום השלישי, וישא אברהם את עיניו, וירא את המקום לרחוק. On the third day, Avram Bima picks up his eyes, and he sees the place from far, and he says, ah, this is the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant. Hashem said, go to one of the mountains that I will show you. How do I know? I'll show you. And at some point on the third day, he says, ah, this is it. What does he see that he is able to say that's it from far? He sees a mountain, and on top of it, Rashi brings us down, if I'm not mistaken, Chazal say it. No? What? A cloud. He sees a cloud, anan of Shekhinah, kashul bahar, connected to the mountain. And that was an indication for him, that's the mountain. So, goes the, on the pasuk, this is what Ari was referring to, and he says like this, V'yomer Avram le'arav. So Avram tells the ne'arim, shvu lachem po im achamot, sit here with the donkey, v'ani ve'anar, who's the na'ar here? Yitzchak. נלחד כה ונשתחווה ונשובה לכם. We will go and we'll bow down. We will go up. You wait here with the donkey. So the Medrash, Chazal and the Medrash explain the pasuk over here. What happened was as such. Avraham Avinu all of a sudden on the third day, he sees this cloud connected up to the mountain. He turns to Yitzhak and says, Yitzhak, do you see what I see? Yitzhak says, yes. So then he turns to the two Na'arim and he asks them, do you see what I see? One Na'ar says, no. And he turns to the second Na'ar, or the third, and he's asked, do you see what I see? And he says, no. So he says, well, if you don't see, so then you're similar to the donkey. The donkey also doesn't see. So stay here with the donkey. And Yitzhak and myself, we will go up. Now, these two Ne'arim, going with Avram and Yitzhak, who are they? Chazal teach us. Eliezer and Ishmael. So let's put Eliezer on the side, and we'll be talking about it, B'zot Hashem, in the next few days or next couple weeks. But let's focus on our friend Ishmael. So Ishmael, Avram and Yitzchak are all in front of Har Moriah, the mountain of the Temple Mount, to be called later on. And Avram and Yitzchak see what the mountain is about, and Ishmael does not see, and therefore he remains with a donkey that also doesn't see. Am hadomeh lachamor, that's the term in Chazal. You don't see, so you're a nation, you're a culture, you're a people that's similar to the donkey. The donkey is blind to it, so you're also blind to it. Remain down there. Now, what it means from Chazal perspective then, is that Yishmael, by essence, really, in depth, does not really have a relationship with Har Moriah. And yet, historically, we see it in front of our eyes, unfortunately, every single day, he is in complete control of that mountain. We do not have control over that mountain, whether we like it or not. And there are all kind of Jews today who have such a hard time with that can't let go of the idea that they're going to go up to Har HaBayit and they're going to build Beit HaMikdash, and the mountain is not in our control. It's in the control of Yishmael and his waqf. That's the Islamic organization that's in charge and responsible for making sure that nobody dares, specifically Jews, to take it away from them. So for hundreds of years, he's controlling the place. And its expression, the intensity of it, is coming into full form these days, in our generations. But Chazal say that he does not really have any relationship with the place. How do we understand that? Now, in brackets, in very important brackets, anybody who does not, I think it's Pashut, anybody, and you'll hear it from people who are not totally not religious, from historians who are not religious, anybody who does not chab that the Islamic war with the Western world today, with at the centerpiece of it, is the war that the Muslims have and the Palestinians have with the Jewish people in Eretz Israel. Who was it? I don't remember. It was the foreign minister of Turkey or France a couple years ago said that the mother of all wars is the war of the Jews and the Palestinians. That's the mother of all wars. That was an interesting, insightful observation, which as Jews, we believe that's definitely the case. But at this stage of history, it's with the Palestinians. It's the center. He saw it as being the centerpiece of all wars in the world. They're revolving all around it. Whether it's September 11th, any airport you go to, and with the threats of terror there, of Islam, the center of it is revolving around this country, and the center of that is revolving around this mountain. So again, He controls the mountain. Chazal claim, though, it's an external control. He really doesn't have a real deep relationship with the place. Now, this is not so different than what the Zohar that we saw yesterday, but that was regarding not specifically Beit HaMikdash, but Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael as a whole. The Zohar said that he who has a Brit Milah and the merit of a Brit Milah has control over Eretz Yisrael. And being that Yishmael has Brit Milah, therefore he controls Eretz Yisrael. Goes out in the Zohar and says, being that his Brit Milah is though empty and only on an external level, so therefore the control of Yishmael over Eretz Yisrael is also empty and external and not really by essence. So it's the same pattern over here. Whether we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, whether we're talking about specifically Makom HaMikdash, Yishmael is controlling, and Yishmael though does not really have a deep and depth essential relationship with the place. The question is, how do we understand it? And to do that, what I would like to understand and wrap up the discussion from yesterday, to try to understand it in a better way, what does it in fact mean? That which the Pesukim explicitly said, that Brit Milah is a prerequisite, a condition for living in and controlling and being in Eretz Yisrael. So before we continue, what do you think? What's your thought? What does it mean? What's the relationship between Brit Milah, commitment to Brit Milah, and Eretz Yisrael? Why does Eretz Yisrael demand commitment to Brit Milah? How do you understand it? And before that, prove to me historically that that's in fact the case from Tanakh. That Brit Milah is the entrance ticket into Eretz Yisrael. Without that, you cannot enter into the land. Yaakov.
Yeshua.
Exactly. Yeshua, Perek Hei, we don't have time to look into the Pesukim, do that afterwards. The first thing that Klal Yisrael does after they cross the Jordan, they go and they perform Brit Milah for all Klal Yisrael because they were not Nimol in the Midbar. They weren't did Brit Milah in the Midbar. Coming into Eretz Yisrael demands doing Brit. Brit Milah is the entrance ticket into Eretz Yisrael. How do we understand it? What lies behind it? Of course, the flip side of that is that to the extent that you do not stick to your commitment to Brit Milah and all that it represents, you lose the land. Yes.
Can you make some kind of a connection like this? That Brit Milah, we say that like by the chapter of Arayos, and we say that it's Venitma Haaretz, that if you, right, something, is that the lesson? Venitma Haaretz? That you'll make the Haaretz Tameh and it'll like kick you out if you are over of the Arayos. And like, Brit Milah is specifically like the circumcision of the organ that will be used to do the rest. So there has to be some kind of like fundamental relationship between like your control over, I guess, using your body for Hashem's purpose and not like your own purposes, and being zocha to like remain in the land. Like you might say more fundamentally that like in order to merit inheriting Eretz Yisrael, you have to be committed to using what Hashem is giving you for His purposes within His rule. Like Hashem set a rule for what you can do with your body. You can have children, you can procreate, but not in a way that's not in a way that he doesn't want. And if you want to live within his rule in Eretz Yisrael, you have to live within his rule.
Well, I accept everything Barry said. I'll try to sharpen and polish the question more, or take what Barry's saying to this deeper level. Granted, everything you said, why specifically Brit Milah? We'll consider that about the usage and the application and channeling of every aspect of one's body or one's being. But no contradiction to what you said. Everything you said, I think, is absolutely correct. Focus it. Take it one step further. Why specifically? That could bring me back. Yeah. Somebody as a Ben Avram Avinu, or why this specifically defines somebody as a Ben Brit. And why, when somebody misuses the power of that organ, dafka then it's referred to as meifer brit. What is meifer brit? To annul a brit. The opposite of a brit. To cut the brit. Why dafka that part in us defines us as Jews? And why is that dafka the one mitzvah that Jews all throughout the ages? 99%. And that's truth in secular, sorry for being so harsh, Tumadik Israel of today. You will still, that's going to be one mitzvah that they don't drop. I remember a few years ago when I was at Miluim, and I think one of our officers went up for the day because the Brit Milah for his son to perform. So I asked one of the secular soldiers with me, like, out of curiosity, when you perform Brit Milah, is it as something like religious, or is it something health? Or the person almost wanted to snap me. Of course it's something as a religious Jewish identity issue. I suspected that was the case, but to hear from the person, I didn't continue. I didn't want to put him in an uncomfortable place or to shake at least that minimal of his emunah. But you don't believe in anything about Judaism. So why does it come to Brit Milah? It's like one thing you can't give up. There's something so basic about it. Why is that defines you as a Ben Brit? B'nai Brit. I mean, I belong to this covenant. I'm in the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when I misuse it, I'm destroying, I may fail that connection, that breed, that bond. Everything that was said was correct. I'm just further and further levels. Yes?
The verse is the main thing for all the mitzvahs. I can't think on two accounts, I'm sure there's many more. But for one is that you can't be on the mitzvahs unless you do a room or just creates all the other things, because it's what creates people who are able to do mitzvahs through Guru. And the second being that, like you were saying before, that through the bris, that organ, that's what makes either kedusha or that, like the ultimate kedusha or the ultimate tahara, the aratumah. It's both.
Why? Again, everything that you said, I think, is totally valid. Why? Yes,
I think what Brit Milah is a common exercise is that the Brit Milah is a point where that gashmiut it starts to come into Ruchaniyut. And that's like Eretz, and the same thing with Eretz Yisrael.
Why does the Brit Milah Gashmiut coming into Ruchaniyut?
Because the power
when one eats with one's mouth, one can eat and then Gashmiut stick away, one can eat as a basis for something with a very Ruchaniyut experience that even has developed tremendously. I think what you're saying is right, though. Why specifically here? Why isn't the Brit stuck in the mouth? It's something so central. I think Yaakov was implying before, it's so central that when you look at the body, that's really it's the center that everything revolves around. It's the center of the body. It's the yisud of the body. So, but what I'd like to do now is take everything that was said, just pour more content into it. And somewhat, but some of you may have been at the Hoshana Rabbi this year that was given in the Sukkah. I touched upon some of the inyanim there. Nothing I'm saying is apart or different than what everything that was said now. It's just, I think, the inner crux of it. And that is as such. There's so many different ways you can come to present it. I'll just say it directly as the way that the Mishnayot, I think. It's a Masechet Midot, talk about it. And that is that there are 10, when you talk about the dimension of space, of the world, the globe, so there are 10 levels of Kedusha that you find in space or on Earth. You have... And look at it as one circle more internal than the previous one. Basically, okay? You have Kedusha or non Kedusha, according to Tumah Derabanan, actually, of Chustar, it's Tumah Eretz Amim. And then you have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And then you have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. And then you have the Kedusha of Har HaBayit. And then you have the Kedusha of Azeroth. And then you have the Kedusha of the Kodesh. Until you get to the Kedusha of Kodesh HaKodashim. 10th one, the centerpiece one. That's right here. And the whole world, there's a Mishnah Masechet Derech Eretz Zuta actually that compares the world to an eye. And the center of the eye is Yerushalayim, it's a very famous line. Yerushalayim Eino Shel Olam. Yerushalayim is the eye of the world. Circles upon circles, radiuses around the centerpiece. And at this centerpiece is Kodesh HaKodashim. And in that Kodesh HaKodashim, that the entire Yerushalayim, the entire globe, and therefore the entire Bria revolves around, are the Kruvim, hovering over Aron HaKodesh, or Aron HaBrit, if you wish. And those kruvim, when Klal Yisrael, the Gemara says, would be doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they would be facing each other. And when Klal Yisrael would not do Ratzon of Hashem, the kruvim would be looking apart from each other. No face-to-face relationship. When they would do Ratzon of Hashem, they would be showing, seeing each other face-to-face. In fact, the Gemara says in the Gimel Regalim, they would roll up the parochet so the Jews can see. Re'uchi batchem, incredible, beautiful line. Re'uchi batchem lifnei makom. See your how much you're loved in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Klal Yisrael. Three times a year, you come up to Beis HaMikdash to see how much we are loved and liked and our chiba with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mentioned it in this, I think, in Hoshana Rabbah. Incredible piece brought in one of the Sifrei Chasidut. The Gemara Masechet Yuma describes how when the Romans went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest place for the Jews, they found the two kruvim were bound to each other, like a male and a female. And they took them outside to the street, and they mocked the Jews and said, this is the famous, most sanctified place of the Jews, this is the famous Kodesh HaKodeshim, this is what they have there, you see? Two figures which are bound together, like a man and a woman. This is what they worship. This is what they have in their holiest place. On that, the Gemara says, that's what they apply the pasuk in Sefer in Megillat Eicha, Kol nechavdeah hizidua, all those that respect kavod for Yerushalayim, cheapened its kavod, ki ra'u ervata, they saw the erva, they saw the most hidden, most private place of Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it was cheapened. Anyways, so one of the Baalei Chassidut was asked about this Gemara. At the night of Tisha B'Av, of all times, the time of destruction, where Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are really in a are being divorced from each other. For thousands of years, that's the ultimate time of Klal Yisrael is not doing the Ratzon of Hashem, so that the Kruvim should be not just facing each other at that time, rather they should be bound together like in a complete state of bond, like a male and a female. So the answer was, the most incredible answer that was given, the pshat is the halacha that a chiyuv of a husband has to be with his wife before he goes out on a journey. Chayav adam lifkodet ishto kodim tzikol ha-derech. A husband has a chiyuv at specific times in the year to be with his wife. One of them is if he goes out on a journey, he has to be with her the night before. Why? Because when two people who love each other are departing from each other, the departure itself evokes the deepest levels of the love in the relationship. Dafka, because of the departure, it brings out and it surfaces, brings up to the surface the deepest bond between them. And that necessitates a chiyuv to be together between the husband and the wife. Says that Baal Chassidut, that was a pshat. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael are departing from each other for thousands of years, it evokes the deepest bond and connection between them, and that's why dafka then they were bound together. In any case, that is the kruvim, and that's what the Kodesh HaKodeshim is really about. And that means that the entire system, the whole universe, revolves around a place which is what? This is at the centerpiece. That means that at the end of the day, the Bria is about what the Kruvim are about. The world, if you ask a Jew, what the world is about, what is the world? What is Kol Torah Kula? What is it predicated on? What's the bottom line of all Torah Kula? What's Judaism all about? It's a world of love. And anybody who doesn't see it as such, missing out on the bottom line, on the centerpiece, on the core of all Kol HaTorah Kula and Kol HaOlam Kulo. It's all revolving around this focal point. It has to be so. If this is at the centerpiece of it, this is the essence of it. It all revolves around it. The implications of what we're talking about are incredible and tremendous. And what we're talking about right now, we're talking about the deepest level that one can discuss, B'chlal B'Torah. Every aspect of Torah is branches of it. So when not to be surprised, when somebody was asked, when Hillel was asked, to teach me Kol HaTorah Kula, Al Regel Achat, it could be one line that encompasses, capsulates all Kol HaTorah Kula, so what does he say? Ve'ahavta l're'acha kamocha. Love your friend as if it was yourself. Or, what he actually tells him is, Ma'idah sanilach l'chavrach l'otel, the other side of the coin. Right. Two sources which are always bound together. If you understand that this world is about a relationship with all of its manifestations, ben adam l'chavero and ben adam l'makom. So you understand what Kol HaTorah Kula is about. And if you're missing that that's what it's really about, maybe you're running around all day thinking you're the firmest person in the world and your tzitzis are flying out and you're shuckling and doubting like crazy and you're run around town with your earphones listening to shiurim from morning to night, but your ben adam l'chavero is lacking, and you couldn't care less about that, and your sensitivity to your friend, ultimately one day to your wife, is lacking, so you're missing out on the entire thing from beginning to end. You're holding on to things from the completely from the outside, not at the centerpiece of it. Now, when one understands that as such, time, sir?
2 what?
5-2 If there's one line, which is the Jewish identity line, you'll ask a Jew, what's your identity, mishpat? One sentence, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. Echad and Ahava is the same gematria. Now, as you go through this world, if it's a world, in fact, which is about this ahava that we're talking about, the closer you get to the center of it, the more intense does the love become, and the more sensitive to it, or to its, any disturbances to it, does it become. And therefore, once you do enter into Eretz Yisrael, and furthermore into Yerushalayim, the demands for purity in that love is going to be higher and higher, and the patience that this land will have, as opposed to other countries, as opposed to other parts of the world, to any misuse of this love, and specifically to take this exact capacity or energy to love and to switch it to the complete opposite end of it, and I'm specifically talking about lust, which is using the same very power itself to bond and to connect and to extend yourself beyond your limits towards the other, with love, to use that same very power for your own selfish needs, which is what lust is about, is the complete hafara of the brit. It's taking exactly to the complete opposite end. It's not a kilkul like all other kilkulim. It's using the same very koach to bond to the complete opposite, to non-bond, because what lust is about, I'm using the other person's body for my own selfish needs. What was really meant to be, I'm meant to connect and to extend myself towards him. And therefore, it's very coded. That's the Parshat HaArayot that we keep referring to. That which you saw in Mitzrayim and that which you will see in Eretz Yisrael do not perform, because the land of Eretz Yisrael does not have patience for that. That's everything else, somewhat patience. When it comes to this, the land, so keep saying inside, we'll see tomorrow or next year, the land will vomit you out. Ve'lo taki ha'aretz etchem v'tamachem otam. If you perform this type of activity, the land will vomit you out. The land has no patience for that. Back to our topic. Yishmael has Brit Milah. So why does the land not get to him? Yishmael has control over Beit HaMikdash, but really, by essence, it doesn't belong to him. Think about it. Yishmael, in fact, has genes of Avraham Avinu, and therefore becomes an incredible Baal Emunah. And when he goes and blows himself up to pieces on a bus, he yells out the name of God, Allah Akbar. But what's his motivation? When somebody came to convince him from Hamas, go and blow yourself up, what was the conviction? He'll do it because he has a big promise that once he does that, his soul will go up to the place of Gan Eden with 70 virgins, which will fulfill all the sexual fantasies. In fact, there was a case a couple years ago in Gaza. One of the terrorists that blew himself up, and thank God in that case blew only himself up, when the soldiers went to examine his body to see that there's no more explosives, they found that there was a certain part in his body that was covered with many, many, many rags. And this, they suspected that probably the shot was that he wanted to make sure that he has that in full and intact so he can use it in Gan Eden. So what do we see here? We have here a very strange creature who combines, on the one hand, incredible intense emunah, and you have no busha to put 5 times a day to his mat down and to pray to his God in ways that we Jews often are embarrassed to do. And when he will go and act the full mysterious nefesh for his God, and yet at the depth of that emunah is something very, very primitive and very rotten, in the form of very deformed and primitive concepts of desire and his concepts of his Gan Eden. On the surface, we're talking about something monotheistic. We'll wrap up and say just again the following. It's true. We're at a much more advanced stage of history. We already went through Mitzrayim, and we went through Babel, and we went through Paras Nadai, and we went through Yavan. We're already within Shem after Yefet and Cham. And all of a sudden we have Egyptian Mitzri expressions again appearing, but this time in the household of Shem in the form of Ishmael. But we dealt already with Mitzrayim. The answer is no. In a monotheistic stage, later stage of history, we're no longer dealing with paganism and primitive behavior. We're talking about already monotheism. In it, under the surface of what it seems to be a monotheistic, even modest religion, sad to say, Arab women today dress much more theistic than Jewish women, most Jewish women in Eretz Israel today. But that's on the surface, because under the surface, the concepts and the ideas that you're giving up and you're living a modest religious world here, life here, so you can fulfill all your fantasies there, that distortion and that deformed ideas is only somebody who has, on the one hand, genes of Avraham Avinu with incredible intense emuna, and at the same time, Egyptian genes with all that goes into Mitzrayim, the introduction of the Parsha of Arayot, manifesting itself in the world of Shem, and coming out in that form. And that's what we're dealing with today. And that's why we believe that at the end of days, to the extent that we do purify ourselves, and our streets starts looking cleaner, and Jewish women start dressing in Eretz Israel like the Jewish woman is supposed to, that's when slowly Eretz Israel will come back to us, and the land will stop vomiting us out. So, Bezat Hashem on Sunday, we'll continue with the first part of Parshat Day.
Thank you, Derek.